Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. And you know, we know that veterinary medicine is amazing, but did you also know that you can even advance your career even further by exploring clinical research in private practice? So with us is none other than the one and only Dr. Glenn Malden. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you. And I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, well, we're glad that you're here too. And I'm really interested in learning more because I have actually not, we didn't really speak on the show about this. So I'm really curious to get your insight and expertise on this. So to our listeners, a little bit of information about a wonderful friend here. Dr. Malden and her team provide guidance and support for clinical research activities within Thrive Pet Healthcare, including research project design, execution, standards, and regulations. She received her doctorate of veterinary medicine from Western College of Veterinary Medicine, and she completed a rotating internship and residency in medical oncology at the Animal Medical Center in New York and a residency and master's degree in nutrition at Cornell University in Ithaca. She's board certified by the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine in both oncology and nutrition. What was that like for you?
It was a long road. It was a long road, but every second worth it.
That's wonderful. We're so glad you're doing this great work for us. Thank you. And so before joining Thrive Pet Healthcare in 2022, Dr. Malden was Director of Clinical Research for Pet Cure Oncology. She's practiced veterinary medical oncology and nutrition for over 30 years in both private practice and academic settings, including the Animal Medical Center in New York, Louisiana State University, VCA Western Veterinary Specialist and Emergency Center in Calgary in Alberta, Canada. She has authored, get this, over 75 peer-reviewed publications, book chapters, and scientific abstracts. She lectures frequently at regional, national, and international meetings. 75 reviewed publications. I think I fall asleep after reading two sentences of a proceeding. So...
Well, I've been doing this for, several decades now. So yes. There have been numerous opportunities over the years to write those papers.
Oh, it's wonderful. Congratulations on all those accolades. So great. So
thank you.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit more about the clinical research and a little bit of that of your role that you're doing at Thrive Pet Healthcare.
So as you mentioned already, I came to Thrive through Pet Cure Oncology. And I was director of clinical research for Pet Cure as well. My medical oncology hat really prepared me to fulfill that role for Pet Cure. But when we joined the Thrive family, I had the really excellent opportunity to sort of expand my horizons quite a bit. And I took over as the director of clinical research Thrive-wide. So what had originally for me been sort of a pretty focused oncology research effort expanded to include all of the different things that all of Thrive is doing, which, as you can imagine, multiple species, multiple areas. So there really are many clinical research opportunities, which we'll have a chance to talk about through the course of the podcast here. So my primary function now with Thrive is to support Thrive team members in their various research activities, and there are multiple different variations of that. Mm-hmm. And it's really been an exceptional opportunity for me, as I mentioned, and has allowed me to really expand my horizons to do many, actually more things than I would ever have imagined in my narrow is not exactly the right word, but a more focused oncology function. So I have many, many opportunities now that I didn't have before.
That's incredible. It's fantastic. And I remember when I was full-time in practice, we got involved in some clinical trials. And I'm sure there's a little bit different between that with what you're going to talk to us a little bit about clinical research. So what are the main kinds of clinical research currently being performed in private veterinary practice?
So within Thrive, and I would Yes, within clinical veterinary practice as a whole, I would say the two main types of clinical research are, number one, and a very important function and very dear to my heart, is house officer research. So a lot of house officers in training, particularly residents, are required to do a clinical research project and often publish that research project as part of their requirements for board certification.
What's a house officer to those?
A house officer is a specialist veterinarian in training.
Okay.
So maybe an intern in some settings, a specialty intern in some settings, and probably most important for our discussion here today, a resident. So okay. Somebody who is doing a specialty residency in a certain area with the intent of becoming board certified in that specialty. So we call all of them collectively house officers. So as I mentioned, particularly for residents, there are often requirements to complete a clinical research project as part of their residency training. There is actually going to be an additional podcast later in the year, I understand, where Thrive's residency training programs and the clinical research that's associated with that will be discussed. But some of the exciting current research topics, just to give you a little bit of an idea what our residents are currently doing, we have projects ongoing that are looking at new diagnostics, new treatments, especially in the area of dentistry, new treatments for skin allergies and other dermatologic conditions, and also new clinical research looking at various aspects of the management and treatment of patients with cancer. So there are multiple different areas where our residents and other house officers are working. So part of my job for sure is to help support these individuals as they're completing these projects and assist them in successfully completing those projects so they become board certified.
It's fantastic, I was going to say.
The second, I would say, important, they're all important, but the second big category of research that that is ongoing is probably what I'm going to call vendor-sponsored research. And what I mean by that when I say vendor-sponsored, so to me, a vendor here is somebody like Merck, Zoetis, Boehringer, who has a new treatment, a new technology, a new drug that they're looking to test and make sure that it does what they think it's going to do, what they want it to do, so that they can then introduce it into the marketplace to help the animal population and their pet families at large, right? But they need to have access to methods to test those new technologies and treatments. So a big part of what we do as well is to assist these entities in advancing the science and getting these new treatments to the animals that need them. So I think probably that those are the two most important categories. I wouldn't say most important. I would say the ones that we currently are expending the most effort and the most time on. One thing that we are going to talk about as we go through the discussion here a little bit later in the podcast, I am going to talk a bit about veterinarians who may want to do or are interested in doing their own clinical research, which is obviously a little bit different than what you would be doing when your project is being sort of guided by a vendor sponsor who has a particular goal in mind with their research.
Right. And I'm sure there's got to be some challenges associated with vendor-sponsored research projects, right?
There are. But I would say also that there are some substantial benefits and that probably I think worthwhile for us to talk about those first before we get into the challenges. And there are challenges absolutely as well. I think that the benefits of participating in a vendor-sponsored research project, there are probably three main categories of benefits. The first one is that for the veterinarian who's participating in that project, for somebody who's interested in doing research, interested in contributing in that way, interested in learning in that way, it gives that veterinarian a chance to increase their job satisfaction through what end up being real contributions to the improvement of our profession, right? So it can be an important mechanism for improving job satisfaction for some practicing veterinarians. In some cases, it can provide additional income. So those vendor sponsors need to provide the financial support that's necessary to do that research. And it is possible to actually augment your income as a veterinarian. You're not going to become a millionaire by doing vendor-sponsored research, but you can certainly augment your income by contributing in this area. And the final advantage to the veterinarian, I would say, is that the expert resources that are provided by that vendor sponsor really allow you to do this type of research in almost what I'll call a protected environment, where that expert clinical trial support that's provided by the vendor makes sure that the study design is appropriate, that the study is executed properly, that all of the statistics are in place and that they're done right, and all of the legal and regulatory concerns are taken into account. So the veterinarian doesn't have to worry about any of those pieces. The vendor sponsor takes care of it. The second big area of benefit, and this is definitely something that over my years as an oncologist, it was clear that this was important. This type of research gives pet owners early access to new therapies and technologies that they might not be able to take advantage of otherwise, right? So it gives them the opportunity to help their pet in ways that otherwise they might not be able to. Sort of associated with that too, another thing that I saw many times over the years is that pet owners often will be really excited about participating in research like this. Obviously, they want to help their own animal, but a lot of them also have this altruistic sort of outlook on participating in this research, and they get really jazzed by the idea that they may be helping other animals by allowing their pet to participate in this trial. Or even more than that, if it's a trial, and this was particularly true for us in oncology, where the treatment that we were investigating might ultimately help people as well, they really liked that idea. They thought that their pet was going to be able in some way to help a person with the same kind of cancer down the road, that was a really, really attractive idea to them. The third and final sort of area of benefit that I'll talk about briefly here is an obvious benefit to the vendor sponsor. So they, by partnering with veterinarians in clinical practice, they gain access to a population of animals with naturally occurring disease that they can trial their new technologies and treatments in, that is a very, very different world from looking at those treatments and technologies in a laboratory model or a very, very sort of narrow controlled situation. So it gives them the ability to real world test the things that they're developing before they release them to market and to tweak them to make sure that they're as good as they possibly can be. Examples, just before we leave this section here, examples of projects that we're working on with various vendor sponsors right now within Thrive, lots of things going on, but to just name a few, we're looking in the oncology area at new technology for facilitating the targeting of radiotherapy, new treatments for canine lymphoma. We also have a lot of trials ongoing with various different vendor sponsors looking at new treatments for skin diseases in both dogs and cats. So there's a lot of things going on.
Well, so we talked about all the benefits. I'm sure there, like we just talked about earlier, there was a couple of challenges that could be associated with the sponsored research project. So what are some of those?
So there are some challenges. I definitely wanted to talk about the benefits and the positives first, but there are some challenges that you do need to consider. And many of these things, while working within the context of vendor-sponsored research, many of these things also apply to other types of research. So one big thing is the time commitment that's involved with any type. And this is true for house officers, it's true for vendor-sponsored research, it's true for research that a clinician may want to do on their own. The time commitment, the time away from the clinic, the time away from your cases is an important factor to consider. And in a very busy private practice setting, this can be a big challenge. Things that take time are things like the training that's involved prior to the study launch, screening appointments, looking for cases, and then rechecking those cases as they're being treated with the new technology or treatment. There's often a lot of detailed paperwork involved that takes time. And then regular communication and update with the study sponsors is necessary. So all of that takes time. There also are, one thing I want to mention specifically here are the manpower needs that may be involved with doing a clinical research project like this of any type. So it's not just the veterinarian who has to take the time to make sure that this project proceeds properly. You're going to need technical assistance. You're going to need somebody to answer the phones for you. You're going to need somebody to help you to keep all of these medical records. So it's not just the veterinarian who is going to need to expend some time to get this study done properly. You're also going to need some support from the other people within your practice to help you as well.
I remember when we got involved in a clinical trial, and to your point, we had to get trained on it. And the team was like, ugh. I was like, where are we going to find time to do this? But when you look at the why, like you just mentioned, and this was for a cancer drug, we really did take a step back. And I said, listen, our team, look what we can do. We can make a huge impact for not just the profession, but the entire world potentially for this. So, once we heard that why and we realized what we can do, the benefits far outweighed any of the potential like hiccups or challenges that might be associated with it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's important to go in with your eyes open, right, and know what to expect rather than to get into it and be surprised, for sure. And you mentioned a really good point. No research journey is without a lot of bumps and detours. It never goes the way that you thought it was going to. There always are challenges, and that's part of it. That is part of the process.
And what would you say to the veterinarians that are tuning in that they're either in private practice or non-academic settings that they're like, hey, you know what? I want to do this. And they're interested in performing their own clinical research project. So what advice would you give them?
So the first advice that I would give is do it. So it can be one of the most satisfying things that you will embark on in your entire career. So if you are interested, then absolutely, I would encourage you to investigate and see what the opportunities you may have are. Certainly part of my role as the director of clinical research at Thrive is to assist my Thrive partners in accomplishing that, if it's something that they're interested in. There are certain factors for sure that a veterinarian who's considering a clinical research project needs to think about. But as long as you sort of go through a checklist as you're embarking on the journey, I think that it is absolutely possible for a veterinarian in private practice to do clinical research if that's something that they want to do.
That's great. And I know you just mentioned this earlier, but what would be some of those factors you should consider before launching a clinical research project?
So just to And I guess what my goal here is in this part of our discussion here is to give people sort of the outlines of a roadmap so that if they are interested in doing this themselves, they know what the steps are that they're going to need to move through in order to be successful. One, probably the first thing actually, and we've talked about this through the course of our conversation here several times in different ways, it is absolutely essential before you decide you are going to do this or before you make that decision that you have confirmed support from your employer, right? If you are potentially not seeing as many cases or are going to need some time away from the clinic in order to accomplish this goal, they need to know that that's what you want to do. Your colleagues also, if they're having to pick up slack or assist you in some way with the research, they need to know. And we've talked about all the support staff that you may need to help you. Support staff needs to know that this is your plan as well. So it is important to have confirmed support from all of the people who will be involved at your site in making this a successful project. And second thing that
I was just going to say, go on with that, because I remember I had a friend of mine. She was going to actually do this, but she never told her employer, and she was stressing out. And I said, you got to tell him, because she's like, well, I don't want to, like, it's taken away from exam time, but you got to be transparent. You have to have that conversation. You can't be like fully booked, right?
Yeah. And you bring up a good point. It's a conversation, right?
Yeah.
So going to your employer and saying, okay, I would really like to do this, and playing up the benefits that we've spent the last 15 or 20 minutes talking about, right? And so that you and your employer together can come up with a plan that works for you and works for the practice that allows you to get this accomplished, right? And as you said, for the overall benefit of the profession, ultimately. Second thing I would say, it is critical to have a good research question. And you may say, well, yeah, but that's not necessarily as easy as it sounds. So it's important to make sure that the question you're asking is actually clinically relevant, that it's going to make a difference. Whatever the answer to that question is, that it's going to make a difference for animals with that disease or needing that therapy. And that also somebody has not previously answered this question. So it's important to have done enough research ahead of time to make sure so that you're completely familiar. Let me rephrase that, completely familiar with the literature in this area. You know what questions need to be answered. You know what has been found before. It's not that research never needs to be repeated, but you don't want to necessarily exactly repeat something that somebody has already done, right? So a good PubMed search is going to be essential before launching one of these. Sort of going back to that discussion with your employer, another thing I would say is that you need to be sure, once you've sort of fleshed out your research question and got a bit of an idea of how you're going to accomplish it, you need to be sure that you've got the people to finish the study. So there needs to be enough technical support. There needs to be enough clerical support. There needs to be enough colleagues who can maybe pick up slack for you if that isn't necessary. The manpower has to be in place in order for this to be a successful venture. A particularly difficult thing here that is not so much an aspect of the vendor-sponsored research. I talked about the fact that the vendor, the sponsor part of that, right, takes away some of the financial stress. But if you are running your own clinical research project, you may not have very much money, or you may not have any money at all to get that accomplished. And that can be a really, really challenging thing. Without getting too much into the weeds here, there are resources available for veterinarians wanting to do clinical research. And it may be that applying for a small grant is the best way for you to go, that you can get the money you need to get this project completed, say, including supporting the manpower needs that you may have. So financial considerations can be frustrating, but obviously are very important. And you need to consider all the costs that may be involved in your research project. Another thing that you have to think about that is taken care of by the vendor sponsor when you're doing that type of research is there are certain legal aspects to doing clinical research. And these are coming to the fore in a more sort of focused way recently. One big thing that I want to mention specifically is the importance of informed consent from pet owners. Pet owners need to be completely informed. They need to understand the research project that their pet is participating in. And having a signed informed consent release is essential for a pet that's receiving any sort of experimental treatment. Experimental is not the new. How about if I say that? New therapeutic intervention, new technologies being used. It is absolutely essential that that owner know exactly what they're getting into. Another thing that is becoming more and more important is back in the day, many decades ago, as we have already said, the type of research that many of my resident mates and I did was what we call retrospective studies, where basically we just sat down with a giant mound of medical records and went through those and pulled out the data that we were looking for. Well, that's not so simple anymore. And what is often and increasingly required is permission from the owner of that pet to actually extract that information from the medical record. So you do have to be careful about making sure that you have all of the different types of informed consent that you need. Another consideration can be the regulatory issues that may govern performing clinical research in owned pets in your area. And some of those may be state mandated. But also a lot of the journals now, if what you're ultimately looking to do is publish the results of your research, are requiring specific approval from an institutional animal care and use committee, or an IACUC, or an institutional review board, which is sort of what I do. So I look over the research proposals as they come in, make sure that they look good and make sense and it looks reasonable. And then I approve them so that later on that approval can be used wherever it's needed. Statistical support is critically important in any type of good research. So a statistician can provide just expertise that is essential. Including commenting on study design, fine-tuning that, ultimately doing the statistical analysis, and then assisting with the eventual manuscript and making sure that everything that's in there is appropriate and all of the details have been dealt with. Which brings us to the final step here, which is writing the manuscript. So ultimately, if you have completed your research project, you've collected all your data, the statistician has given you the big stamp of approval, next step is to publish it. And it's probably a good idea, actually, to have chosen your target journal at the beginning of all of this, before you get to the end, so that you've read the instructions for authors and you know what the editors are going to be looking for, that you haven't left big pieces out, that you've included everything that they're going to be looking for. It's also important early, we're at the end here talking about writing the manuscript, but another piece of this that needs to have been completed at the beginning is you need to decide who the authors are going to be on your project, on your paper. And I remember back when I was a very young resident having a mentor tell me that some of the fiercest, angriest disagreements that he ever saw between colleagues were related to authorship on paper.
Really?
So that you need to have decided, okay, I'm going to be first author, you're second, you're third, you're fourth. So it is set in stone ahead of time. So there's no arguing by the time you get to the end. There are writing services out there who can help somebody who hasn't written a lot of manuscripts. Frankly, the review process can be daunting sometimes. So having an expert to help you write that manuscript, tweak all the words so they're perfect, and all of that good stuff can often be a very, very helpful thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes me want to actually do one of these, believe it or not. It's always been like a bucket list item for me, but you never know, right?
It's absolutely possible. And you just need to find a question you're passionate about. I guess that's probably a really good place for us to sort of bring our discussion to an end here, which is you need to have identified something that you're passionate about, a question that you really want to answer, that you're convinced is going to be important and is going to help animals and the people that love them. And from that point, you can move ahead, especially if you go through the basic steps that we've talked about here, is absolutely possible to complete that research project if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, I love it. Like, I guess my research project will probably be why dachshunds are so amazing. So I don't think I need to do research on that. I think we already know. Well, Dr. Glennon Mauldin, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for being on the show.
You're very welcome.
Oh, thank you. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate the podcast as always. It helps us out. Continue to do great work out there. We'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.